Tom looked out the side window at the trees whipping past. It was the wildest sort of coincidence. Who knows what else might be out there, lying in archives and libraries, unrecognized, because the right people haven't looked at it in the right way. Things for which we've found safe, acceptable, believable explanations. A few kilometers past Uberide, the road became rough, and I paid all my attention to my driving. The Feldberg loomed high on our right. Shortly, the Monsignor honked, and his arm jabbed out of the leading truck pointing left. I saw the old logging road and honked to show that I understood. I pulled the floor shift to put us in four-wheel drive. Heinrich drove like the lunatic he was. He seemed unaware that the road was no longer paved. Our truck bounced and shook as I followed him, and I wondered if we would lose the two workmen clinging to the back. I silently praised the Japanese quality control workers who had helped make our shock absorbers. The sun was already high when we reached the area where Eiffelheim had once stood. There was no sign of it. I had copies of the satellite images in my hand, but close up, everything looked different. Nature had reclaimed its own, and the trees had had 7 centuries in which to grow and die and grow again. Tom bore a bewildered expression as he turned round and round. Where had the village green been? Where the church? We might have walked past the place entirely, except that the American soldiers who had stumbled upon the site had thoughtfully left behind their empty beer cans to mark it. Heinrich took charge, and the rest of us fell quickly into the roles of his assistants, but then he was a field man, and we were not. From among the equipment in his rucksack, he took a GPS transceiver. Within moments he had pinpointed our location. He marked the map with a grease pencil, then pointed with it. The church must be buried under a cruciform mound atop that small hill. The graveyard is most likely to the rear of the chancel, although it might also lie to the side. We found the mound quickly enough, and split into 3 teams, each searching the ground in a different direction from the chancel end. It was not long before one of the workmen, Augustus Maurer, found what might have been a headstone smashed to rubble. We could not be sure. Perhaps they were natural rocks. We resumed our search. Judy found the grave. I could see her off to my right when she stopped and stared down at the ground. She did not call out, but only stood quietly for a time. Then she crouched, and I could no longer see her through the brush. I glanced around, but no one else had noticed. They continued to pace slowly forward, searching the forest floor. I made my way across and found her kneeling next to a sunk and broken stone. Soil action had claimed the lower half of the stone, but it had sunk at such an angle that the face on it had been partially protected from the elements. "Is this it?" I asked quietly. She gasped and sucked in her breath. She turned and saw me and relaxed visibly. "Dr. Zengler," she said, "you frightened me. I am sorry." I crouched beside her, my old bones protesting. I studied the face on the stone. It was worn as only the breezes of 7 centuries can wear. Its outlines were faded with time, obscure and barely visible. How had the soldiers ever noticed it? "Is it the grave?" I asked again. She sighed. "I believe so. At least this is the one that the soldiers found." She held up a cigarette butt to show how she knew. "The inscription is nearly illegible, and parts of the top are broken off, but see here, the letters? H-A-N-N-E-S-S-T-E. She traced them with her fingers. "Johannes Stern," I said for her. "John from the Stars, the name he was baptized under." I looked around us. "Do you realize how many graves there must have been? And this is the one we find." "I know. I'm scared."
"Scared?
Of what?" "When we dig him up, he won't be the right shape. He'll be something wrong." I did not know how to answer her. Burger or alien, whatever the shape, it would be wrong in one sense or another. "Gus found another headstone," I told her. "So did Heinrich. Both were smashed. Tom thinks that when the plague swept through here, the neighboring villagers came and destroyed the gravestones of the sorcerers. Yet this one, presumably the one that most frightened them, was not touched. Why? She shook her head. There is so much else we do not know and never will know. Where did they come from? How many were there? Were they brave explorers or bewildered tourists? How did they and Diedrich establish communications? What did they talk about those last few months of life? Her face, when she turned it up to me, verged on tears. I imagine, I said as gently as I could, that they talked of going home and the great things they would do when they got there. Yes, she said more quietly. I suppose they would have. But those who could have told us are long dead. I smiled. We could hold a seance and ask them. Don't say that, she hissed, her fists clenched tight, pressed on her thighs. I've been reading their letters, their journals, their sermons. I've been inside their heads. They don't feel dead to me. Anton, most of them were never buried. Toward the end, who was left to turn the shovel? They must have lain on the ground and rotted. Pastor Dietrich was a good man. He deserved better than that. There were tears on her cheeks now. As we were walking through the forest, I was frightened that I would meet them still alive, Dietrich or Joachim or one of the villagers or
something horrible.
She nodded silently.
That's what frightens you, isn't it? You are a rational, secular, 21st-century woman who knows absolutely that alien creatures would look different and smell different, and yet you would run screaming like any medieval peasant. You are afraid you would act as badly as Frau Joachim.
She smiled a faint, small smile. You are almost right, Dr. Zengle. She closed her eyes and sighed.
Haiku hiptoi, chotoi sikman.
I am afraid I would not act as Pastor Dietrich did.
He shames us all, child, I said. He shames us all.
I looked around at the tall oaks and the wildly beautiful mountain flowers, the woodmasters and butterheads, and listened to the rattle of the woodpeckers. Perhaps Dietrich had had a fine burial after all. Judy took a deep breath and dried her tears. Then she said,
Let's tell the others.
Heinrich gave directions for the dig. After so long, the coffin will have disintegrated. Everything will be filled with clay. Dig until you find wood fragments. Then we will switch to the trowels. Gus and Sepp, the other workmen, began their digging a little ways out from the grave. Because the remains would have sunk over the centuries, they would have to dig deep. They wanted the sides of the hole to slope inward so that they would not collapse. Both men were from old Breisgau families. Gus's folk had been stoneworkers for many generations, and Sepp Fischer was descended from a long line of fishermen along the River Dreisam. It was already late afternoon when the digging began, but Heinrich had come prepared with gas mantles to work into the evening. There were also tents and bedrolls.
I would not want to try and find my way back in the dark, he said. Remember Hansel and Gretel.
It was only when the evening sun was setting that we discovered how the soldiers had discovered the face. The light streamed through a gap in the trees, striking the stone and throwing the carving into sharp relief. Through some accident of weathering, it was only when lit from that angle, in the growing gloom of twilight, that the feature stood out, as if it were a hologram projected into the stone. Gus and Sepp were bent over their shoulders and did not notice, but Heinrich was stooped just beside it, and hearing Judy's gasp, turned and stared. It was a mantis's face, and it wasn't. The eyes were large and bulging, and the stone carver had given them a hint of faceting so that they sat like gemstones in the alien countenance. Those eyes would have been yellow, I knew. There were traces of lines that might have been antennae or whiskers or something else entirely. Instead of insect-like mandibles, there was a mouth of sorts, a caricature of human lips and chin. Judy grabbed my arm. I could feel her nails dig into my skin. Tom was tugging his lip. It was the face from the church crypt. Heinrich paused and stared at the stone without speaking. It was obvious that This was no weathered distortion of a human face. It was a demon, or something like a demon. Heinrich turned and looked at us, gauging our reactions. Already the sun had moved and the visage was fading. "I think," he said, "perhaps I should take a rubbing."